And JP's website, by the way, is newsvandal.com, and you can get on his email list with the Daily Rundown in a very simple way, simply by emailing info@newsvandal.com. And let's see if we have Mr. Sotili on the line. Mr. Sotili, are you awake?
Oh, yeah. I was just taking a meditative moment along with the radio gods. Is that what we had there, the radio gods?
I guess. Well, I have to say, I apologize. Dead air is not the most attractive accoutrement for a radio man. But it does remind us when that happens of what it would sound like if the station isn't supported. So I hope it means enough to you that if you're one of our regular supporters that you are going to the website. Right now it's in upgrade mode, and that's where I was at, a very meeting to get everything back up, moving up at the Drupal ladder, and also the server, and things are coming back together now. But I tell you what, let's throw it out to Alameda. How's everything on the West Coast? And man, is enough stuff going on?
Yeah, now, you know, we could talk about the odd weather. We have more thunderstorms coming. We're actually having East Coast-like weather here in California, which in my 4.5 decades of being mostly a Californian and a couple interregnums on the East Coast, I've never seen. But, you know, we'll get around to climate here in the week that was. But, I mean, we should really start with Chattanooga, because the story has moved since yesterday, even since this morning when the FBI told news organizations, including a BBC story that I found, that there was no link to international terrorism or terrorism. They really weren't calling it a terrorism case. But then a representative, Michael McCaul, Republican from Texas, he's chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, gave a press conference and said, yes, we are looking at this as terrorism. This is starting to be examined for its links. There are a lot of things coming out about the young man, Mohammed Youssef Abdulaziz, 24-year-old graduate with an engineering degree from the University of Tennessee, which, by the way, kind of sets you up pretty well in life. University of Tennessee, not a bad school to get an engineering degree from.
No, no.
His father, interestingly enough, a soil engineering specialist with the Chattanooga Public Works Department. So he's got this middle-class background, and he was into mixed martial arts. He was well-liked in high school, well-liked by his peers in college. But now it looks like he took a trip to Jordan in 2014, and that's what's being examined. People saying he came back a different person. Also, there was a bitter divorce between his parents in there.
Yep.
And also in April, a DUI arrest, and also perhaps officer reporting possible cocaine and marijuana present at the same time. He had a court date coming up. Then, of course, he goes on what's being called a rampage, killing four Marines. And ultimately what this is turning into, James, and I'll concede the floor here in a second,
sure,
is the conflict with the Islamic State, ISIS, ISIL, as the administration calls it. You know, whether or not he was directly inspired, there is a good chance, because of a couple coordinated tweets that were found from a known ISIS account, that there is going to be some ISIS link made. And this is going to now come down to a couple of things. One, the folks who argue for a backdoor built into all technology are going to say, see, this is why we need a backdoor, because if he was communicating, he was communicating with encrypted messages on black sites that basically the dark web, it's sometimes called, that allowed him to communicate with people without these backdoors there to exploit, so that you can trace this guy. And then the other thing that occurs to me is that the United States has spent about $2.92 billion, about $9.2 million per day, on a war on the Islamic State. These are airstrikes. You're talking, as of, I think, June 15th, 4,613 sorties, bombing missions, bombing runs against the Islamic State. Also, you had a drone strike killing over 30 suspected militants in the Sudan just in the last 24, 36 hours. You have airstrikes operational pace increasing in Afghanistan, many of those targets are ISIS targets. Yes, folks, ISIS is now active in Afghanistan, and this is one of the things we're finding, is that ISIS is actually fighting America's previous enemies, Al-Qaeda groups and now the Taliban, because they are actually on their own agenda. So, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, all that stuff. But the bottom line I'm getting to is we may be entering something not really terrorism. This may be a phase of asymmetrical warfare. And I'm wondering if the United States is going to come to terms with the fact that whether you support it or not support it, I'm not making a value judgment, but the United States is in an undeclared war.
Well, I mean, with the population saying they're ready even to commit more troops if necessary to defeat this, I mean, I think people just want, you know, you ask people, do you want this problem solved? They'll say yes. And if they think bigger bombs, faster bombs, bigger planes, deeper bunker busters, whatever it takes to root this problem out, I think people will just say, you know what, let's do it. Let's get her done. There's a sort of mentality like that. If you just take it on the face, on the surface.
This is what McCall said. He said, we have to, this is his quote, we have to drain the swamp over there so the mosquitoes don't come bite us over here.
Yeah, well, you know what? No offense. I mean, I have no sympathy with some of the egregious, horrific actions that are being done, right? I mean, children cutting people's heads off and certain things. But, you know, we've talked about this before, using phosphorus, white phosphorus, and in Fallujah, and depleted uranium, and other things. I mean, and I'm not making false equivalencies here. I'm just saying that kind of tired old rhetoric that is as old as, you know, taking care of savages one way or the other, is just really putting your faith in not unbridled capitalism, as the Pope's been saying, but unbridled militarism. If you think bigger bombs, faster bombs, more drones, draining the swamp there, if you really think, like Israel, if you think you have the military solution to your problems and then you're going to mow the lawn in Gaza every few years to beat this submission back, I just think the problem, and by the way, I'm not trying to defuse this at all, JP, but I think your idea of asymmetrical warfare where these things could pop up, was there a connection? Is there a connection? Will there be more of these things? I'm still, frankly, since 9/11, more amazed that more of these things haven't happened. I'll tell you what, here's another little beautiful mind parallel. I'm not talking about my beautiful mind, but just one of these weird connects. I wanted to see what you think about this. F-35, finally just about ready. Finally just about ready to go. Do you realize in 2001, there was a fire to make sure we stayed ahead of everybody else? Let's build this incredible plane. 2001. Here we are 15 years later. How much ahead have we been if we can not be able to produce something for 15 years and we're still ahead? Who's selling us this stuff and why do we believe in it?
Yeah, no, and look, I've written about the F-35, which by the time it's done could end up being a $1 trillion program. The great David Axe and Robert Beckhausen over at War is Boring, I mean, these guys are propeller heads about military technology, military strategy. You know, people are gaming. They're looking at how the F-35 matches up against the F-18. It doesn't. The F-18 is better. You could have, if you wanted to stay ahead, you could have upgraded the F-18 fleet at a quarter of the cost. Look, there are a couple things there. One is, James, obviously, we're in a period of military Keynesianism, and what that means is Milton Keynes and Keynesianism was the idea that the government should stoke the economy by spending money through government auspices. And although you have a lot of, you know, free marketeers who are really big on strong military, the little dirty secret is that strong military is one of the things that's helping to prop up this flaccid economy, because it's providing jobs for people on these boondoggles like the F-35. Now, the folks at the top, the Northrop Grumman's and the Lockheed Martin's, and they get to make big, huge amounts of money off of this. But, you know, they're employing people at the congressional district level, and that's one of the things that fuels these. Mm-hmm. On the other part of this, in terms of pure military strategy, and I've looked at a lot of military assessments of what's going on with the Islamic State, you ain't going to bomb the Islamic State out of existence. It just is not going to happen. It's just never going to happen. You can cripple them for short periods of time in terms of supply lines and the ability to do things like extract oil and turn it into cash. But operationally speaking, you cannot bomb the Islamic State out of existence. This is, you know, in terms of pure strategy, now we're up to, I think it's the 3,550 boots on the ground as advisors in Iraq. It has to increase. If this is what the policy is, if a generational, as you've heard, James, and we've talked about on this show many times, if this is a multi-generational or at least a generational fight, as Obama and military leaders put it, it's going to end up with more troops on the ground. There's just no way around it.
By the way, that's Nobel Peace Prize winning president.
That's Nobel Peace Prize winning. But this kind of leads us into the first part of the week that was, which is going to be a little mini deep dive, because although they don't want to say that they are linked, they don't want to say that they mention these issues in talks with the Iranians. The Iranians hold the pass key to dealing with the Islamic State.
Well, you know, based on your C-SPAN talk, you listen to the C-SPAN talk.
Yeah, that was John Wolfstall at the and the Atlantic Council.
Yeah.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, I hope there's so much detail in that the little headlines don't really get about trust. I mean, if it's just like, do we trust somebody or not, it's missing a lot of things that are triggered, built in there, who gave up what, who's doing what, and it's really important information. That said, the Iran deal explained in clear language by a nuclear expert, just before we go there, one of the powerful pieces of news that you highlighted this week as well was this very tricky way, sneaky, however you want to call it, to some not so pleased with it, of refurbishing our nuclear weapons but not calling them simply redoing, although it's more capabilities built in, which is really not in compliance with what the president has said or what's expected. And it's so interesting, JP. You can say the words, and if you say the words and do something different, how do you keep the credibility? Well, let's look at this Vox piece. The Iran deal explained in clear language by a nuclear expert.
Yeah, and that story you mentioned, that's from the Center for Investigative Reporting. Their website is called Reveal, so it's reveal.org. Check it out. There are two pieces. There's a piece about Obama's promise to not add new nuclear weapons and this sort of upgrading trick, supposedly turning old weapons into new weapons. And then there's also an amazing story on the revolving door between regulatory agencies, Congress, and the nuclear weapons industry. And how if we talk about revolving doors on Wall Street, this is a closed community.
Right.
And I actually, I grew up in Livermore, California, home to Lawrence Livermore Nuclear Laboratory, the world's leading nuclear weapons research facility. Those of us who weren't labbies, we were often upset with our proximity to this sort of instrument of nuclear destruction. And our representatives, like Ellen Tauscher, former representative, who is part of this merry-go-round. You basically can't get elected here in that district. I'm not in that district anymore. That's actually my old stomping grounds. You can't get elected if you're not on board with the nuclear program. And there is this do as we tell you, not as we do thing. And this is part of, I think, what's amazing about this deal that's laid out by Aaron Stein in this interview with Max Fisher for Vox. Aaron Stein, he's a nuclear nonproliferation expert with the Royal United Services Institute. What's fascinating is I've looked at all these different assessments, and whenever you come down to physicists, when you have nuclear physicists who look at the deal, they all say, wow, well, this is a great deal. Every single one of them. Because 95% of the uranium is shipped out. Their uranium enrichment, such as it is capped almost in perpetuity, at least for the next 25 years. I mean, we talk about the 8 years is when the Iranians get an easing on arms embargoes related to ballistic missiles. 5 years for conventional weapons. But by the way, who's the biggest arms dealer in the world, and who wants to sell weapons to them, you know, like the Russians or whatnot. How do you get the Russians and Chinese involved? Because that's a market for them. Also, they'd like to get oil from the Iranians. But ultimately, in terms of inspections, you know, what Ehrenstein says is that the likelihood of Iran getting caught if they cheat with this deal is 100%. Their intention, the ability of them to make a weapon, if they have an intention, is taken away for 25 years. And really, if you look at the sort of the transparency measures in built into the agreement, it's 40 years before they can make a weapon without you ever knowing it. 40 years. So if you, I mean, there are all these different things. The Arak heavy water facility where they're making the weapon, where they can make weapons grade plutonium, that is being decommissioned, so that's gone. Every aspect. Also, there's, you know, John Wolfstahl, who used to be an advisor to Joe Biden, and now he's working for the administration sort of as an adjunct on all of these agreements. He's a nuclear weapons expert and an expert on Iran, by the way, as well. It talked about how if anything happens, if any part of this agreement is reneged within 65 days of a violation of the agreement, sanctions kick in. Boom. And also, the United States has structured this so that in the UN, if the United States just wants to put a veto vote out there, they can kick in, they can stop the agreement and kick in the sanctions at any time, And the Chinese and the Russians cannot override that veto. So basically, the United States has unilateral power at any time to pull the plug on the agreement and reinstitute sanctions. And as John Wolfstahl said, there's not like a signing bonus for like guys who sign a big contract for $100 million to be a pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. You get a signing bonus. There's no signing bonus. They actually have to meet certain benchmarks before this $100 billion or $150 billion that guys like Ted Cruz is going to be used to destroy the state of Israel. Before that ever happens, you have to have these benchmarks met. And here's the irony of it. As you pointed out so aptly at the beginning, the United States is building new bombs under the auspices of upgrading old bombs. Israel has nuclear weapons, and now Iran, which has repeatedly said, and the Ayatollah Khamenei has issued fatwas against nuclear weapons, repeatedly said, we don't want a nuclear weapon, we will never build a nuclear weapon. Well, they basically said, okay, we'll enshrine it here. And now the United States and Israel has a nuclear advantage against Iran, and still you have Netanyahu acting like a Yahoo.
Yeah, well, you know what? Israel knows that you can say whatever you want to the international community and do whatever you want. Underground, they did it themselves. I think that's why they are rightly concerned about what's possible, although they did not allow inspections in. They did not sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. U.S. has never said, you know, they have that policy of ambiguity, neither confirm nor deny. Just think if Iran went with that strategy.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a non-starter, right? And I think, James, I will be blunt in my analysis here. In terms of Israel, it's about two things. It's about the occupied territories, and it's about the moral high ground. And Israel has been able to camp out on the moral high ground vis-a-vis the Iranians, and the Saudis have enjoyed that little juxtaposition because the Saudis also have been able to capture, I think, in some ways correctly, in some ways falsely, the moral high ground. There's Saudi Arabia videos coming out this week of them publicly beheading people. Where do you think ISIS got the money and the idea from, folks?
Well,
anyway,
also 15 of the 19 hijackers. And
exactly. I mean, anything that you hear about the state of Iran, you could actually just take Iran and replace Saudi Arabia, and it would probably be true, particularly about sponsorship of terrorism around the world. But in terms of Israel has been able to effectively link the plight of the Palestinians to the evil nature of the Iranian regime, because Saudi Arabia and Egypt and other Arab states have essentially abandoned the Palestinians over the years, and because Iran is a supporter of Hezbollah in Lebanon and of the Palestinians and Hamas in the occupied territories, Gaza for Hamas. and they actually provide some sort of support and money for them, that is really what has been one of the wedges that Israel has been able to use to forestall a resolution to the Palestinian conflict. That's the looming evil of Iran. And so now that Iran has done this, it takes away this important lever of power available particularly to Netanyahu, but generally to the Israeli occupation Palestinians.
One Haaretz op-ed piece this week used the metaphor of Netanyahu with his blanket, his security blanket, being able to use the threat of Iran wiping Israel off the map and that whole scenario, that without that, where do they go? What is the fallback? And interestingly, I think people probably know this, but Persians, Iranians are not Arabs,
So
they are Shiite and the Sunni and the different elements that get involved there. But I don't remember Iran with madrasas all over.
None. No, Iran does not. Iran is not an exporter of radical Islamic fundamentalism. Saudi Arabia is and has been for 30 plus years. And it is Wahhabism that has morphed into the Islamic State. It is Wahhabism that fueled the Taliban. It is Wahhabism that was the basis of of Al-Qaeda. Now, the Islamic Brotherhood, there's a little bit of a
Muslim Brotherhood.
The Muslim Brotherhood, the Salafists, they're slightly different, but they are akin to the Wahhabists. Much different than what went on with Iran and their Shiite Islamic revolution. And I am not here to be an apologist for the repressive nature of that regime, particularly against homosexuals. Less so, it's far less oppressive of women than Saudi Arabia. I mean, by magnitudes of order, because you can be a stock trader in the Iranian stock market and be a woman. You can be a doctor and be a woman. You can drive and be a woman. There are many things you can do. You can be in parliament and be a woman. Many things you cannot do in Saudi Arabia. You bring up this wonderful analogy from Haaretz. The other thing is it provides political cover domestically for Netanyahu or for any prime minister, because essentially what you have in Israel is not a monolithic, we want to clamp down on the Palestinians, we cannot stand the Iranians, that hard right, uber militaristic point of view is not representative of the Israeli people completely. It isn't.
Well, they have moved to the right, though, over the past.
They have moved to the right, but it's unfair to say that they are monolithic.
No.
And what this Iranian specter has been, and I think that is an apt analogy that you brought up there from Haaretz, has also been a security blanket domestically for domestic politics, not just for international politics. And that is this is one of the things that has kept Bibi Netanyahu going domestically while there has been corruption within his own political regime. So, there's also that interesting little complicated texture there.
But let's talk then about this. I think it's a very interesting piece you're highlighting here about the title, Everyone Relax, Israel Can Live with Iran Deal. You wouldn't get that impression from the kind of hardcore full-court press, Netanyahu calling on the Republicans in Congress and others. Hillary Clinton kind of signing on with this one, even though one of her main supporters, Jaime Sabin, is a billionaire who formed a group with Sheldon Adelson just this last year to keep Israel on the front burner. But that said, they're saying, if you think it's a lie and you can't trust anything, don't read past this first paragraph.
That's right.
But otherwise, basically, some of the things you said, look what just happened.
And this is, he is buttressing everything that Aaron Stein said and everything that all other positive interpretations or interpreters of the deal have said. But this is Uzi Avon. And Uzi Avon is a physicist from the University of Tel Aviv who actually worked at the Dimona reactor. So this guy worked in the Israeli nuclear program. He is a professor of physics at Tel Aviv University. And when he looked at it, he said, They're going from 22,000 centrifuges to 5. They cannot do anything close to acquiring a bomb for 15 years. He said, folks, relax. They cannot get a bomb for 15 years. Their breakout time, if you believe Netanyahu, it was months.
That's right.
If you believe sort of the general consensus, it was a year. If you believe the Israeli intelligence and the CIA, they actually stopped pursuing a bomb in 2003. But even I'll put it on that side, Uzi Evon is saying, this is a 15-year delay. How can you not see that as a victory?
Well, I guess, I mean, if that part is being held up as a domestic wedge or cover, as you say, or, you know, international community sympathy, whatever that is, that would be hard to give up, because suddenly your main talking point, not to mention you're associated with holding up, you know, cartoon bombs at the UN.
That's it.
So, I mean, this is, by the way, Bibi Netanyahu, I just read on Facebook, I don't know if it's true or not, but somebody said IQ of 180, brilliant mind and all that.
He's a smart man.
You know what I mean? So it's not about that. It's just interesting, because there is some truth that the Iran deal is strengthening. Well, this is this next one from National Interest. It strengthens America's military option, but I also think it strengthens Iran's, if not stature, reach in the region. That seems to be the big thing that others are trying to crazy
and
about.
That's what gets back to Hezbollah, Hamas, what's going on in Yemen, what's happening with ISIS, because now Iran has leveraged this deal into moral high ground. Now, Uzi Evon said the Iranians may be celebrating, but the simple fact is that they have swallowed a very bitter pill, more than they would like to let on. And even though they're celebrating, they've kind of really taken it in the shorts in terms of their nuclear program. And that's what Zachary Keck, who is the editor of the National Interest, points out, said, if you just want to get down to basics, you want to bomb Iran, you should accept this deal. This should be welcomed by the bombardiers, because what it does is, one, it decommissions Iraq. Once Iraq is decommissioned, the troublesome outcome of bombing a heavy water plutonium plant is basically eliminated, because one of the things that may have kept people from bombing it in the past is that when you bomb Iraq, you are now going to have this massive dispersal of radioactive material. Huh, so now that's a target. Also, because you're going to have inspectors all over the place, it's going to be like a target mapping expedition. Now the United States and its allies are going to have this ability to go in and chart where all of the bodies are buried and all of the targets should be. Essentially what this does, I would add another thing, is it also one of the things Keck points out is that the delay allows Israel and the United States to increase its capabilities for making this kind of – for conducting this kind of attack. So that's another benefit. And I would say also, if Iran reneges or cheats on this deal, the moral imperative to then bomb is increased exponentially, because you've already made the deal in the interest of peace, and then it proves the point that Iran is a bunch of cheaters. Strategically, it is a win-win for anybody who wants to bomb Iran, which then shows the inherent irrationality of the bombardiers in their reaction against the deal.
Well, some other commentators are pointing out that actually Netanyahu, the leader of Israel's vehement opposition and reaction to this, may actually help sell the hardliners in Iran that are worried about the very things that you're talking about, that how much are we giving away? What are we getting out of this? Well, obviously the economy's been hurt. They have a lot to gain ground there. But it is an interesting one that may actually serve to help sell it to the Iranians. I mean, the president's still trying to sell it to Congress. And I think, gosh, what a tricky time when you have, you know, basically every Republican in the country running for president now.
The key to that one is Schumer. No, Schumer is the key. If Schumer is on the fence right now,
interesting.
And he's a Republican. Democratic senator from New York. There is a large, there is a significant Jewish lobby inside, and I'm not saying that in a negative or positive way. They're just, you know, it's the Jewish vote in New York is incredibly important. And it's one of the reasons why people wondered where Hillary was going to come down. Hillary's throwing some initial support behind it is excellent for the prospects of the deal. All he has to do is come up with – it's just got to be his veto. It has to be safe from being overturned in a vote. So that's some 30-something votes. Mm-hmm. If he can get like the 32, 35, 37 senators, he'll be fine. And Schumer, I think how Schumer goes may determine how some others go in the Senate.
Interesting. I thought you meant Amy Schumer with her new movie Trainwreck, yeah. Which is, you know, a little bit of one of those beautiful mind connections. But also in that, you know, something that is also scary from Iranian point of view, or, I mean, with a stroke of a pen, this thing goes, it's with a stroke of a pen, it goes away as well. So when you're talking about who's trusting what, I mean, where Hillary, if she's the next president, what she'll do going in with her supporters, or if it's Bush or whatever.
Well, I will make this right, this claim right now.
Okay.
If Hillary Clinton becomes president, the deal will be safe. Uh-huh. And I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Okay.
I also think that there's you could be if you wanted to play three-dimensional chess with Hillary coming out much more quickly in favor of it than I thought she would be. You wonder if this will then become a talking point in the election. And do you want to risk another war, or do you want to vote for a peace candidate? Oh, and by the way, I'm sorry about the Iraq vote.
And, oh, by the way, who's she appealing to now? I hate to be pragmatic, folks. But anyway, the end of death to America, is it so?
It may be. And this is from Arash Karami. He's writes for Al Monitor. He writes the Iran Pulse. And, look, one of the fascinating things that I thought about this piece was that there are reformist and hardline newspapers, and they've been battling it out with headlines over this. So – this Iran, this monolithic Iran, it's, you know, the axis of evil Iran. They actually have dueling newspapers with dueling points of view hashing it out.
What?
And imagine that. When one of the headlines in a reformist newspaper was the beginning of the end of the death of Iran. And one of the things that's coming up is headlines about Iran has finally gotten respect. The siege against Iran has finally ended. You know, back in 2013, President Rouhani wanted people to ratchet back on the death to America stuff. So some of these rallies would go to death to arrogance, which, you know, I think we can all get behind a little death to arrogance. Iran is latent with possibilities and rife with peril. There is still a Washington Post reporter, Jason Rezaian, who is being held there, who is on trial for espionage. There are three other Americans there. One who is probably a CIA agent who has been missing for a few years, and there are a couple others who are being held. Those hostages. Look, if Iran just doubles down on the moral high ground and releases these hostages and goes to a logical conclusion of this, which is to begin to realign itself with its really natural ally in the United States for many historical, economic, and sociopolitical reasons, and not the least of which is a very wealthy and influential expat Iranian community in the United States, particularly in Santa Monica, California. There is a possibility of Iran becoming a functionary one in the stabilization of Afghanistan, particularly since ISIS is there now fighting both the government and the Taliban, and the stabilization of Iraq and the long-term defeat of ISIS.
Well, it's funny. That's just where I was going to go to wrap it up because, you know, there's no way to predict how all these caroms are going to go. But one possibility of the deeper dive of what's happening is that it is attempting to address getting Iran's already involvement to a greater degree, and what does that mean, and all that stuff. But I think that's certainly weighing in the algebra there. But let's take the next 2 points too. Greece has been all over the news, and suddenly a big stand up, and then just a big squat down. It looks like everything must go. You know, my only question is: okay, so this comes through. What happens in 3 years when they've sold everything they have? When do they build, create make something that's ever going to make this system work.
No, this is really like putting the half-alive corpse of the Greek economy on sort of a slow drip system by which the blood, lifeblood of the economy is slowly drained off. And then in 3 years, since even these reforms, I think, are unlikely. Every assessment from economists I've read is that these reforms, such as they are unlikely to do anything to jumpstart the Greek economy. It's basically going to have to come back and loan money, get another loan, and use that loan to pay off the existing loans and recondition those loans so that those loans will be pliable enough so that it can continue to service those loans in the service of the previous loans. I mean, I know it sounds kind of kooky, but that's why I said it that way, because it is kooky.
Well, maybe they can get some student loans here in America.
Well,
they can't bankrupt. You know,
if you're a corpse and you have a student loan, it passes on to your progeny. Look, this story is really about how the IMF wants a debt relief, and Christine Lagarde is sort of in a battle with Merkel. Merkel is not; she's becoming the taskmaster of Europe now. She actually she was on camera. There was a Palestinian girl who speaks fluent German, who's been living in Germany for years and is seeking asylum. And you know, Merkel was saying in this roundtable, "Well, we can't take everybody in," and she started to cry because her German dream was dying right there in front of Angela Merkel, and Angela Merkel tried to console her.
But by the way, let me just jump in quickly. So I think they're taking up to half a million coming into Germany.
Yeah, they are. They do take a lot.
But you know, I've been reading this book on Queen Noor. Incredible to look at the region from that point of view in Jordan, and trying to work with American presidents and who got pushed aside after different amazing perspective. But you think of Jordan and Iraq with 1 million to 2 million refugees in a country of 6 million, and then how many Palestinians? And they're open trying to – when you think about – we just think here and, you know, what about – you know, they're not going to change our way of life and all that. But, I mean, with what's going on there in the region, when you think of the refugees – the same with Syria, all those Iraqis, these things are not coming out of nowhere. I mean, just, you know what I mean, JP, reading about Jordan, and then you think, oh my gosh, how do you, and at first see what happens, it's the wealthiest that come, and there's almost like a kick to the economy in a way.
Well, this is what's happened with Greece, is that this turned into a brain drain, and you had some 3,500 doctors flee Greece, and where did they relocate? To Germany. And one of the engines of this that's fascinating is that when you look at Spain and Portugal and Italy and Greece and Ireland, you get the wealth that gets drained off because of this asymmetrical relationship, to use the word again. And also you get brain drain because the people who would be there to build the economy, in the case of Greece, have already left and gone to Germany. And who is the beneficiary is Germany.
Hmm. Wow, kind of creepy. Well, or not creepy, just the free markets, right?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Free market in your pocket, in their pocket. Okay, how about this? Anthropocene of the crime.
Folks, Bloomberg called it a freakish year for the climate. This is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric – that's easy for me to say. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I almost got it. The NOAA. The NOAA. They issued a report, 413 scientists reporting from around the world, and here's how it goes. 2014, hottest year in the 135 years that human beings have been keeping records in the modern era, like actual records. Global sea level continuing to rise, a steady clip of 3.2 millimeters per year. Glaciers have retreated for the 31st consecutive year. There are more hot days and fewer cool nights. CO2 up 40% since the Industrial Revolution, and it continues to grow. You should look at the graph. It's scary. Oceans are absorbing 90% of the heat. We now have El Nino here off of the coast of California, plus a blob off of the North Pacific and a blob of heat in the North Atlantic that we've talked about on the show. Alaska, 18 degrees warmer on average. The spring breakup of the Arctic zone, 20 to 30 days earlier. French scientist Jean Jouzel, in an interview with Earth Island Institute, said, it would have been much better had we dealt with it earlier, like 25 years ago. It's not too late. but it's really urgent.
That is, I tell you what, that is some serious, that is some serious Jefferson Starship. I guess I've never really heard that song. They're definitely going a new wave-o suave-o on that one, and pretty intense. You know, Robert Reeder and I are working on a new song inspired by a man who's become one of Fox's favorites. It's called "It's Hard to Have Fun When You're Dancing in the Devil's Dung." And I'm serious. It's a very interesting, you know, we're putting it together. It's a rock and roll piece.
Pope Frankie, gotta love him.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's not afraid to call some of this stuff, but I mean,
all right, let's Uber Alice.
To talk about Mother Earth that way is a touching thing. Very Saint Francis. Speaking of Uber Alice, lofty unicorn values. Well, some people are just saying they're not real.
Well, what is real is that Google today went over $700 per share. It was up 16.8% at one point. Before we came on the air, it was at $667.69. I was hoping it was $666. That would have been awesome because then you would have the right-wing freakout. It's because YouTube – the watch time is up 60% in the second quarter. There were more 18 to 49-year-olds viewing on mobile alone YouTube than any cable network. So that's $17 billion in ad revenue. And, I mean, they're just going nuts over there at Google. Now, that's not a unicorn, right? Nope. The NASDAQ is up, by the way, a lot. And the S&P, you know, it's kind of had a good run. That's no small part because the S&P 500 companies have spent $550 billion buying their own stocks. Had they not been buying their own stocks, their profits would not have been down 6.5%. Their profits would have been down 9%. So nothing like blowing smoke up your own bum.
It sure is.
And speaking of blowing smoke, Esther Dyson here, she's an angel investor. She's a former journalist. The famous book she wrote, Release 2.0, I think it was in 1997, about the coming of the internet economy. She says, look, there are a lot of unicorns that are no good. A lot of these unicorns that are not overvalued. But she said Uber is extremely sustainable because Uber is incredibly cheap. They are not paying – the reason why they're functional, they are not paying all the externalities of running this business, like insurance and upkeep of cars. Mm-hmm. Since the people who are contractors have to pay it, Uber is making out like a bandit.
Wow, what a great system, I tell you. Well, you know, you mentioned Google, and I always joked about in Google we trust. But the other thing is now Amazon has cities where they're delivering stuff same day. That's been their wet dream forever. And my thing is I'm just waiting for a 3D printer so I can actually make my own Amazon and then just have it all right in on my couch.
Well, you're making a joke, but 3D printing is there are a lot of consumer goods makers very fearful of 3D printing.
Anyway, how about the future of the economy? How about American politics? Is it all Uber or just a little Uber?
Well, there are some politics happening in California where a California judge levied a $7.3 million fine because Uber is not cooperating with the California Public Utilities Commission. Look, the California PUC is looking for accident details, accident reports, also discrimination issues about accessibility, people not picking up people with guide dogs. So if you're discriminating against the blind, you're in trouble. Well, Uber has not complied with requests for information. So there's I think they have 30 days to comply before they get this fine. And Jeb Bush was just in San Francisco here in the last day, and he took Uber to an event over at Thumbtack. And what is Thumbtack? It's a startup that helps users hire professionals as contract workers, and this is what this McClatchy.
Oh my gosh, JP. I am just laughing because what this means is we're learning how to just take the workforce out of force, or force the work into the whatever. At any rate, did we lose you, JP? I think they cut you off because you were making too emphatic of a point. I'm going to give him a call back, but let's move on to the next story. And this is Uber for frat boys, okay? Uber for frat boys, how bellhops is capturing untapped collegiate labor. And is this in the same vein? That is some crazy stuff. So, again, let's see what happened. I think we lost JP. There we go. He's hearing me, but I'm not hearing him. So why don't you hang up and we'll call you right back. And that's how we'll do it here, because sometimes, there we go, sometimes the technology just is too techy. Maybe we should be careful. Are you there, JP? Wow. This is an interesting one.
Do you hear me now?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm saying maybe we should be careful with these guys with all the...
Yeah, no, maybe they're annoyed. Look, let me wrap this all up.
You got it.
Okay. So Uber, 1 million rides per day, 58 countries. And, you know, the Republicans love this because it stands for freedom. It stands for being your own boss and the entrepreneurial spirit. Hillary says she will crack down on bosses who exploit employees and misclassify them as contractors. Look, this is all about regulation, big government. All these issues are going to come up around Uber. But the bottom line is Uber is leveraging this thing we've talked about many times. Underemployment, the workforce participation rate. And that's what, you know, bellhops is doing in its own way. Bellhops, the story that you just introed, what it's really about is taking college kids who are undergraduates, who are not really employed. You go through this really sort of Byzantine application process where you have to show that you have a good personality in a video, and you have to wear a little headband, a green headband that has bellhops on it, and people can hire you to help them do day moves. And, I mean, that's kind of great. And here's the interesting thing. One of the reasons why the startup founders in Chattanooga, interestingly enough, who started this thing, is they said, well, look, these guys who we're hiring, it's about 80% male at the company, and about 99% in terms of who is actually signed up to be a bellhop to help people move from point A to point B on a given day, is – they don't have to provide them any benefits, because as college students, they probably have a health plan. They probably have food. They have all of the ancillary things that they need, so they can sort of squeeze them on the wage, but it gives them a little bit of money. And then they, you know, they wear their college shirt and they wear the headband and they come out and everybody says, "Ah." But this is kind of where the labor force is going. It's about exploiting underemployment, because college students are, in a sense, part of that underemployed workforce looking for some way to make ends meet, but don't have leverage to determine their own employment outcomes. So they're like the contractors for Uber at sort of the will of the connector, the middleman, and that's what Uber is and that's what bellhop is.
Well, what about Airbnb? Statehouse battles now with industry, hotel industry targeting them.
This is fascinating because Airbnb is another thing. It's shaking up the hotel industry by connecting people to properties. And there is a battle going on between the hotel industry and between Airbnb. Fake grassroots campaigns. You have executives, corporations, and trade groups pumping $11 million into state legislatures where there are 60 bills to regulate Airbnb in 23 states. And Airbnb is fighting back by hiring peers, or creating, sort of pseudo-creating, hiring an organization called Peers. Another one I love called Targeted Persuasion. Targeted Persuasion is battling neighbors for overnight oversight try and rein in this selling off of excess capacity, which is your spare bedroom. And the hotel industry is not happy. See, here's the thing. Like taxis, hotel industry has to be regulated. They have to meet certain standards for health and safety. Airbnb and Uber do not. That's the rub.
See, so regulation sucks, man. Okay. Robots do check-in and check-out of cost-cutting Japan hotels. Is that the future? Forget the people and the workers altogether.
Yeah, and what's the other story? The next story?
The other one is more ATMs, fewer jobs at the Bank of America.
And then what's the next, the final story in
this? Why self-driving cars will raise your hackles. No, your taxes.
This is what I love, is that, okay, Airbnb and Uber, hooray for them. But in Japan, a place called Weird Hotel, literally, it's Henna Hotel, which translated Weird Hotel, is almost completely staffed by robots. They can do everything but make beds. It's a cost-cutting measure, folks. Pretty soon, Airbnb, forget about it. Robots, how about Bank of America? Well, they've had some profit issues, so what have they done? Their employees are down 7.1% in the last year. They cut 2,979 in the second quarter alone. ATMs are up. Employees are down. And finally, self-driving cars. Google has had some problems with accidents they just reported on, but the problem is human error led to 11 rear-enders and 14 total crashes. And Google is saying, see, we didn't hit them. They hit us because actual drivers, human drivers, not good. Robot drivers, good. Hey, Uber, beware of Google and robot drivers, because guess what? There's going to be a point in which your business is going to be no good. And as Tim Gorzolani and Forbes pointed out, a Brookings Institute study determined that taxes are going to rise as robot cars come. Why? Because 6 billion speeding tickets are going to be issued this year alone. That's a lot of money. Think about this total. 4,000 drunk drivers per day. That actually translates into a lot of cash. So basically, this lost cash from human error that feeds municipalities and counties is going to be lost. And you're going to wonder, you know, okay, so a robot's driving me home, but he's going to have to drive me to the bank so that I can pay my tax bill.
Ubelgurgle. Google Uber. Ubelgurgle. Ubelburger.
Who's gonna tell you when it's too late? Who's gonna tell you things aren't so can't go on thinking nothing's wrong. What who's gonna drive you home tonight?
Tonight. Google Booger, Google Burger, Google Schmooger. Anyway, Google Uber, and there they are off. That's the cars. Great stuff. You're listening to J.P. Sotile, the News Vandal, newsvandal.com, inside the headlines with James Moore. We motoring because we got some great other stuff to cover here. Weekend good news, latest sign that coal is getting killed.
Coal bonds down 17% while oil and gas up. Coal plants are actually switching to natural gas, which you may not like fracking. There are a lot of reasons not to like fracking, but it is cleaner in terms of burning, better for the environment. Coal having a hard time. By the way, Governor Mike Pence of Indiana saying he is not going to comply with the Obama administration's new EPA regs on CO2 regulations on CO2 emissions. But I'm telling you, man, they're cranking down on coal.
Interesting. Coal mine Frankenstein. How about Obama just established 3 new national monuments covering over 1 million acres?
Always good. The Waco Mammoth National Monument in Texas, the Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument in California, and Basin and Range National Monument in Nevada. Plan your trips accordingly.
Beautiful. Okay, meet the giant hero rats training to sniff up Cambodia's landmines. Wow.
15 giant pouched rats.
Gee, minis.
They can sniff out landmines 200 square meters in 20 minutes. And here's the thing. They just go after the TNT, so they don't find false positives, unlike metal detectors. All they do is seek out the landmines and get them. And when you think about Cambodia with 4 to 6 million untriggered ordinances in the environment, 64,000 killed or maimed so far and 25,000 injured, as you know, James, I know this is your right up your alley. These rats are hero rats. That's what they're called, hero rats.
Good rats and bad rats. That's fantastic. Well, how about quickly odds and ends? Serena Williams, amazing. Now they're saying she's our Muhammad Ali.
Well, Dave Zirin of The Nation is avoiding all the stuff about her, whether she's she dressed like a woman, does she look like a woman or a man, all that other sexuality and racism that comes. He says, look at her as an athlete. This may be the greatest female athlete of all time.
Well, she's beautiful as can be as well. But Pluto in pictures, a visual timeline of our changing view of icy orb, amazing images.
Yeah. Yeah, 3.6 billion miles, 9 years to visit what has been called a dwarf planet, but with its young mountain range and polar ice caps and whatnot, it might get upgraded from dwarf planet to actual planet. Hooray for Pluto.
Like, duh. Anyway, the Planned Parenthood controversy over aborted fetus body parts, kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah, and I've been covering this a lot on the rundown because I think that there is a bigger issue here other than the abortion issue. Now, there is the abortion issue, the Center for Medical Progress, kind of in a gotcha moment with Deborah Nucatola. She was senior director for Planned Parenthood's Medical Services, talking about how they harvest cells and that process. Now, there are two things. They didn't really break the law because they only charge money for the transportation of the cells, but there's the ethical question of whether cells should be used. This is going to be an issue over the next year, and particularly on the Republican side.
Interesting. Well, the Iraq conflict leaving nearly 15,000 civilians dead over 16 months, almost 1,000 a month.
And 30,000 wounded. Hmm. I'm just saying, folks, when we talk about ISIS, when we talk about Iraq, I just, in my mind, I think about Colin Powell, Secretary of State. You break it, you own it, and we walked away from it, and now they're struggling with it.
That's right. Yemen, too, you know, still more being bombed there, dying in the capital and whatnot. Leg.
Look, what happened to the Iraqi people is one of the great crimes of the last 300 years.
Yeah, I mean, and relentless. All right, Lego compatible prosthetic arm lets kids build their own hand. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, this is from CNET. This could have been in good news. Ico actually has a fully functional robotic prosthetic arm, and kids can build like Lego addendums to it and plug them onto that arm, and they can have like a scoop or a clamp or a little ray gun. Or it's, you got to check it out. It's really cool.
Cool. How about this one? Despite international bans, pollutants still turning up in Alaska fur seals. And now, of course, Al Gore is saying, what are you doing, Obama, with the Arctic drilling? But what about?
Yeah, he said it was insane, right? He said Arctic. Folks, every chemical, these are chemicals, preservatives, pesticides. Every time you spray Roundup, it doesn't go away. It ends up somewhere, and as this shows, things that have even been banned continue to show up in the systems of animals.
That's what our song's about. Starlings on Prozac, for goodness sake, how pharma may affect wildlife.
Yeah, 24 wild star. Look, human beings don't fully metabolize these SSRIs and other psychoactive agents we take, so it comes out of our systems and goes into the treatment system and then goes into the environment. And then it affects animals. 24 starlings they studied, if they were on Prozac, they no longer got the worm. The early bird gets the worm. Well, they weren't early. They didn't get the worm. And that could affect their ability to survive in the long term.
Wow. Amazing. Trump, your cat. The internet takes on Donald Trump's
it's exactly like
hair and wins.
It's wonderful. Dangerous minds. They have all kinds of fun stuff. There is a meme out there where people put a little toupee on their cat. Post the video. Check it out.
I have to say, and then this El Chapa, serious crime lord, cartel drug guy out with mile-long. But people said, well, how could they dig a tunnel and people not hear it? Folks, it was 30 feet down, 30 feet, three stories.
Yeah.
But then he gets out, takes a picture of himself, and kind of says, Trump said what? I mean, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Huffington Post announcing today they're no longer going to cover Trump's presidential candidacy, which I disagree with because he's a candidate.
Yeah, well, they're grandstanding.
Yeah, they're grandstanding. Nice point.
From one grandstand to the other, right? Anyway, this is modern roller derby. It's gone away from the fishnets and the fights. What?
No, it started really in Austin 2000, 2001. I have a good friend who's a roller derby enthusiast and player. Mm-hmm. It is no longer that sort of fake sort of semi-wrestling thing from the 70s that you used to watch on Saturday mornings. This is a serious sport with serious athletes doing serious damage to one another. Check it out. This is a fascinating long piece.
Well written. Oh, sorry, that's from The Guardian as well. And our final piece today, JP, always good to hear your voice. The Metalhead Kids Are All Right.
Guess what, Tipper Gore? They are significantly, a study from Humboldt State University found that metalheads were significantly happier in their youth and better adjusted overall currently now. They actually turned into highly functioning individuals who joined society, got jobs. You know what? If you think they're going to sit around as the world go by, you know, you're kind of fooling yourself, because it's a game of do and die. Out there is a fortune waiting to be had. And if you think they're going to just sit by, you got another thing coming, folks.
All right, we'll take you out with some metal, get me into the happy hour. JP, I love you, man. And thank you so much for all that you are bringing to the table here. We'll see you next week, folks. Don't do anything you wouldn't do.